Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And Bob Carpenter said to the new fella in the booth with him, Kevin Franson.
Franny.
Said, you know, if Robles could just hit 245, we'd really have something out there in center field. Well, let me tell you how many points below 245 he is now. He's 245 below 245. He's 0.
He's 0?
He's 0 for the season.
Hit.
Four games, four starts. He's 0 for the season because he can't hit major league pitching. He maybe could hit the Nats if he paid for another team.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That was Monday. This is Wednesday. Victor Robles appeared in two more games for the Washington Nationals since I said that. And you know how much closer he is to 245 right now? He's no closer. He's still at 0. He played last night. He went 0 last night and made an error. Now, the error doesn't really matter because the Nats lost 53-2. That doesn't really matter. Patrick Corbin, again, showed why he's not worth the money.
Yeah,
not even close to money. He couldn't. He had, like, going into the third inning, he had, like, 60 pitches.
Yeah.
Chuck Todd and I gave up on that game at about the same time. Patrick Corbin got racked.
Yes.
And they had to take him out, and then they brought in Austin Voth, and he can't pitch. And then none of them can pitch.
No, it was...
They lost 100-4, something like that. But Juan Soto, the headline is Juan Soto hit his 100th home run, and he's like 14 years old. He's one of the youngest guys of all time to do that.
He's remarkable.
Yeah, but it's Robles is what I'm talking about. And by the way, later in the show, we're going to have Barry Zwarluga to talk about what stunned me on Monday, finding out that the Learners were intending to sell the team. I just... beside myself. I don't really understand it at all. Maybe Barry can explain it. But they cut Andrew Stevenson to give Victor Robles a full shot at center field. He doesn't have any hits. He has an RBI because he leaned into a pitch and got hit and drove in a run. But he has no hits. No hits. What are we talking about? Come on, man. It's not what I wanted to open with. Michael is not with us today. Michael's still away. Michael will be back with us on Friday. I was going to tell a story about my second booster shot. You have not gotten yours yet.
I have not. I'm very interested to hear how it went for you.
Well, this is what happened. I went into my... I have a lot of CVSs near my house, three or four of them within an easy drive. I went into the one that I always go to, one on Connecticut Avenue, near Fessenden Street. And I walked in there over a week ago, and I walked into the pharmacy area, and I said to a young woman who was the first line of people working there, there were two women and a pharmacist, a male pharmacist. And I said to her, I'd like to sign up to get a booster shot. I'm eligible. I'm qualified. I'd like to sign up for a booster shot. And the reason I did this is because having called the 800 number for CVS and having reached an actual human after waiting about an hour, I was told, you can do this. Go into a CVS and sign up.
I think I know how this goes.
And the woman said to me, and I'm quoting directly, you've got to do it online.
Yep.
And I said, I don't know how to do it online. I'm pretty old. I'm not real good online. I'm one of the people who qualify for the booster shot because of my age. So I came in here because I was told I could do this. Could you help me? And you know what her response was? She turned her back on me and walked away.
Are you kidding me?
She turned her back on me and walked away.
Oh, that's appalling.
Yes. I can't believe that. Fortunately for me, another woman who worked there looked at me in pity and said, come down here, and I'll help you. And this woman took my phone, helped me answer whatever questions I had to do to make an appointment, and I made an appointment through her grace. I made an appointment for 10 o'clock the next Wednesday. This would be last Wednesday, 10 o'clock. And why did I do that? Because I had Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off from PTI, and I wanted to go to Delaware, but I wanted to get this shot and stay home for a full day to see if I had any particular reaction, if I got a fever, if my arm hurt, all of those things which everyone considers when they get a shot, I considered, and I was going to stay home for that day. I'm just going to sacrifice the day. Okay. And at my age, I don't have that many days left. So I wait and I wait and I wait 4 or 5 days. And then on Wednesday morning, I'm getting ready to go. We finish the podcast Wednesday, and I'm getting ready to go to the CVS to get my booster shot, my second booster shot. And I'm going to get it. I'm going to get Pfizer because I've had 3 Pfizers to this point. And although a number of people, including doctors, have said to me, you can get Moderna. It's not going to matter.
Right, you can mix and match. Yeah,
you can do that. But a particular person who I called in the healthcare business said, get the Pfizer. Just do it. So, okay.
Because that's what you had gotten before?
Yeah. So CVS does Pfizer.
Sure.
Somebody else, Safeway, does Moderna. Whatever. However it works. I don't know how it works. But at 10 after 9, 50 minutes before my appointed shot, I get a call from the pharmacist at the CVS. And he says, yeah, we're going to cancel. We don't have any vaccine. I go, what? And he says to me, we don't have any vaccine. We overbooked. CVS always overbooks. But maybe we'll get some Thursday, maybe we'll get some Friday, and we'll call you. And I said, hold on a second, Sparky. I planned my whole week around this.
Yes.
Well, I booked it, you said it was okay, and now you don't have it. Sorry. So I do what any old person would do, besides getting angry. I get in my car, and I drive to that CVS, and I go into that CVS. And I go to the pharmacy. And yes, that other woman is still there.
The woman who turned her back on you?
Turned her back on me.
Great.
I go into the pharmacy and I ask for the pharmacist, asked him to come over. I said, I'm the guy you just called. And he said, yeah, I'm sorry, we overbooked. And I said, would you do me a favor? Would you call around to a few CVSs around here and see if any of them have the vaccine? And he sort of looked at me like, who's this guy? But he said, okay. He said, okay. And he called 2 or 3. And he got a CVS that had the vaccine. And that CVS, for those of you who play Washington geography, that CVS was on Wisconsin Avenue inside of a Target in what used to be a Best Buy.
Oh, sure.
And what used to be across the street from Hechinger's when Hechinger's was in business. Okay, for those of you who want to go back 50 years.
The Tenleytown one, right?
That's right.
Yes.
So I'm pretty excited, but I'm pretty nervous too. But he says, just go over there. They have the vaccine. I gave him your name. Okay. So I go over there, and on the way, I make a call to a few people to sort of do a backup, and I have a backup ready if I need it. I have a doctor ready if I need it, but I say, this is an adventure for me. I'm going to see if I can do this. Now, I park illegally. Now, I want you to understand this. I park illegally very close to the Target, which houses the CVS, down a side street, and I know it's illegal. And you might say, why did you do that? And I said, at this point, the worst I can get is a $100 ticket.
Right.
And at this point, to get this shot is worth $100 to me.
Yeah.
Because I was not going to get this shot 20 minutes ago because they ran out of vaccine, and now I'm going to get it. I go into the Target. I go all the way back to where the pharmacy is. And a woman named Evelyn is the pharmacist. And I say, I think somebody just called you for me to get a shot. And she said, are you Mr. Kornheiser? And I said, yes, I am. She said, sit right down. We've got vaccine. Now, this is music to my ears. We've got vaccine.
It's fantastic.
And she says, just first, you've got to fill out a couple of forms. And I said, Evelyn, I'm really sorry I didn't bring my glasses. It's hard for me to fill them out. And she said, you know what I'll do? I'll ask you the questions and I'll fill in your answers. How great is this customer service?
Evelyn's doing great.
How great is Evelyn compared to the woman in the other one who turned her back on me? Right? Turned her back on me.
Right.
I didn't exist.
Right.
I didn't exist.
Reminds me of some people that we tried to buy coffee off of years ago.
Dunkin' Donuts. So in Rehoboth, on Rehoboth Avenue. So so then she calls over someone else. Now, I even went out of my way to wear a T-shirt. You know, so that she could find...
Oh, right, so
you
know, it's easy to get...
Easy to get to my arm. I want it on my left arm.
Right.
She calls over someone else who prepares the vaccine. For all I know, she was stacking carpet remnants, you know, an hour ago. I don't care. Right. And I took the vaccine. I got the shot. And then I sat there for 15 minutes, because that's what you're supposed to do to see if there's an immediate reaction. I didn't have any reaction at all. And then she said, you can go now. I was so happy. And you know what I did? I went back to the other CVS.
Well, can I just ask before that?
Yeah.
Any ticket on the car?
No. Got lucky.
That's fantastic.
But I would have happily
gladly played it. Yes.
I didn't care about that. I went back to the other CVS and asked for the pharmacist, and I said, I just want to thank you personally because this worked out for me, and you went out of your way to help me. Thank you personally. And then I just looked at the other woman who didn't know who I was. I'm sure didn't know who I was. So that's the story. And then all day, I had no reaction. And you know why I had no reaction? Because I didn't get the real vaccine.
Yeah, it just
and I got
gave
nothing.
You, gave you the the dummy shot?
Yeah, nothing. There was nothing in that shot. So I wasted a whole day because I had no reaction whatsoever. None. Zero.
Have you had reactions with the other shots?
I've had a little redness in my arm. I've had a little swelling in my arm, but I got a much greater reaction to the shingle shot.
Oh, well, so
much greater reaction to the shot. But you know what I found out, and I don't know if this is true, and people could email us about this. I found out, for example, that the Moderna shot, women seem to have anecdotally a greater reaction than men to the Moderna shot. Nobody my age, over 70, nobody my age has had any reaction to these shots at all. Because our immune system doesn't even exist. It doesn't exist. It's like you're just pouring water on your head.
Right, come on in. You know. Yeah.
So that's my booster story.
Well,
I later found out, I read a story of the study that they did in Israel, and it said it only really works for 2 months.
Is it 2 months?
2 months is all.
I thought it was 4.
No, 2 months. It wanes after 2. It may have some lasting quality up to 4. But you know what? Every 2 months, I'll take another one.
Sure.
I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay. If it's going to help me, if I get this, not die from it,
which is
I'm good.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, is if you're vaccinated, the chances of being seriously ill appear to be greatly, greatly reduced.
So that's, you know. And
well, I'm glad.
And I would advise everyone, including Kyrie Irving, to get it. But, you know, if you're not going to get it, you're not going to get it.
Yes.
And if you're not going to get it, that means if you want to get it, it should be easier to get.
Yes.
Because not that many people want it. Although in my case, originally, I was locked out. Boy, was I.
Oh,
whoa. I wasn't just mad. I was panicked.
Well, yeah, it's like, what do you mean?
I was panicked.
I've scheduled everything around this because you're very smart, and I would do the same thing, is you want to build in a couple of days or at least one day for that I feel sick day, you know, in a reaction or whatever.
Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Michael Wilbon will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Hot Pink Hangover. It's one of my favorite bands. I'm so sorry they broke up. This is a song called Kennedy and Monroe. It's off their final album entitled Beautiful Freaks. It tells the story of a cinematic love affair as the characters compare their relationship to those they grew up watching on the silver screen. Again, it's called Kennedy and Monroe. We're going to play Hot Pink Hangover all day today. I love them. And their guitarist, Davey Hazard, sends us this stuff. It makes me very happy. And they play in Michael Wilbon, who's out in Arizona. There were two play-in games last night. I watched the first one, going back and forth with the Nats and their terrible performance in Atlanta. I watched the first one, and I did not watch the second one. It was too late for me. But in the first one, the Nets beat Cleveland. And then the second one, I'm happy to say, the Timberwolves, with Nathan Bubis on the bench, son of the socialite, beat the Clippers. I was 2-0. You were 1-1. You have to be a little bit surprised that Minnesota won, because I think you thought the Clippers were going to win that game.
Yeah, but there's no surprises, Tone. I mean, there would have been a surprise if Brooklyn had lost.
Yeah.
But the thing about these playoffs, and the reason I think they'll be different than anything we've ever seen, anything, is that you have no idea. It's as much like the NCAA tournament bracket as it is the NBA. The NBA is not about surprises. The NBA is about how do the best teams navigate the road to the championship. That's what the NBA has been about for the 75-year history of the sport, which you know better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But this is different. I'm going to tell you something. Brooklyn had like 5 people play out of their minds. And they beat Cleveland by like two possessions. And this is, you know, it was an interesting development because how often are you going to get four or five people to play out of their minds in the playoffs? Is it going to happen every playoff game? No, it's not. It was Cleveland. Cleveland's a good team, a well-coached team by J.B. Bickerstaff. They got some young, talented players. Cleveland's going to be a force in the Eastern Conference if they stay healthy and together. But still, they're Cleveland. They're a team that is a legit eight-seed kind of team. And Brooklyn at home with Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving made his first 12 shots, Joe.
Yeah, he was great. And I told you on the air yesterday they were going to combine for 60 and they combined for 59.
Yeah, they're great. But does that equal, like, great?
That's what they're supposed to do.
Not every night. You can't do it every night. Even if the two of them do it every night, they had guys play out of their minds. So it was an interesting development. And that's why, is it a surprise that Minnesota won? No, Minnesota's at home. Minnesota's so mouthy and talented. And you got to deal with Patrick Beverley every minute of the game.
Such a pest.
Who's threatening to get himself thrown out of the game and you
such a
thrown
pest.
Out of the game.
He's like worse than Lance Stephenson. He is. He's a pest. He's annoying.
Yes.
But I would like him on my team. I don't want to play against him.
To play against him. And the Clippers are finding that. And Patrick Beverley, who played for the Clippers for five seasons, Patrick Beverley says after the game, all I want to do is beat them. I hate them.
Mm.
And they're his friends. They talk about how during the normal course of their lives, they're still friends. Of course they are. He and Zubats, apparently, particularly. They text each other constantly, and Patrick Beverley comes out and says, I just want to kill them.
So
there's a certain entertainment to that.
I really like the play-in format. I really like it. I really like it in baseball, and I like it even better in basketball. Because now the team that lost, the eighth-place team, in both cases, the eighth-place team, yes? Yes, the eighth-place team that lost gets another shot. They get another shot at home playing the winner yet to be determined in the 9-10 game. So the 9-10 winners got to go on the road. And if 10 wins, they're going to have to go on the road twice and win two games. And I just think that the NBA has come up with a tremendous single elimination in effect format. I really like it. Do you?
We knew this. We knew this last year. Going into it last year, I wasn't sure I was going to like it. And then after one quarter of the first play-in game, 90% of people who like basketball were going, "Oh yeah, this is it."
Yeah.
Now LeBron James doesn't like it. He didn't like it, even though it was his only chance to get in the playoffs. But he was whining about it last year, and everybody looking at it going, "Now, LeBron, you're wrong on this one. You got this one dead wrong. You're angry because you got to be in it." And they, you know, so this is what I think the league has come up with an incredible thing. I don't like it in I don't like extra teams. Baseball season is different. Every season has its own personality, its own mission, if you will. And baseball, after 162 games, I don't want to see more teams. I want to see fewer teams. I don't like it at all.
I love the single game. Basketball puts in 20 out of 30 teams. Two-thirds of the teams in the league are in.
Yeah. Well, so baseball probably does something similar now.
No.
I don't want to see that.
Okay. I love it.
That's just
me. Love the baseball one. Phoenix is the team that you root for. Everybody knows you root for the Bulls, but Phoenix is the team that you root for to win this whole thing. Are you still with Phoenix? Do you believe that Phoenix is the best team?
Yes. 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 They won 64 games in a season. One of the few things I got almost right, prediction-wise, at the beginning of the season in late October, was I said nobody will be head and shoulders above the others enough to win 60. There will be no 60-win teams this year. Well, there was one.
Yeah.
There is one. The Suns. And they've been fabulous, Tony. Remember, Chris Paul went out for 14 games, and the Suns were 11-3 without him. I mean, so is that the same as John Morant being whatever they are in Memphis, 22-5?
No. Yeah, it's just incredible what Memphis did.
It's staggering what they've done.
That hurts you for MVP. I mean, if you're sitting down to say who's your MVP, and the guy you think is your MVP goes out and the team does great, you say, well, maybe he's not the MVP. Maybe he's not. But
I don't even have Ja Morant on my first all-NBA team because this is just personal. I sat down two nights ago and voted on all these things. And I don't take myself seriously, but I take the voting seriously. First of all, people now, their bonus money is attached to whether people make, second or third team all-NBA, which I think is wrong.
Sure.
I think that's wrong. But it is. But their money is attached to them. So, it hurts. I don't have Ja Morant on my first team. I don't have Kevin Durant on my first team. They missed too many games.
So that's what I wanted to get to. The story of this season may be this. Who can stay healthy? That may be the story of the season, right? Who's healthy at the right time?
It was the story of last season. I mean, Kevin Durant was able to come back on one leg and get within a toe of beating Milwaukee in a series and winning again for him, which would have been staggering. And it only enhanced Kevin Durant's reputation and all that, but they didn't. And people point out to the Suns all the time, Tony, a big part of the Suns season is how they bounce back from getting to the finals and having the crushing disappointment of that. But they beat the Clippers without Kawhi. They beat the Lakers in the first round with Anthony Davis and LeBron, limping through that a little bit. They beat Denver without Jamal Murray. And so that's part of the Suns season. One of the reasons I voted for Monty Williams for Coach of the Year is that he was able to get through that, get his team through it. He was able to get his team through a situation in which the owner decided not to pay young Ayton, and the disappointment from that was palpable. Yet, Monty Williams was able to keep that kid's head directed, and he was able to keep that team directed, though they had these crazy things. Chris Paul out for 15 games, 14. So the Suns are the best team. Does that mean they'll win? No, it doesn't. I mean, they're going to get a threat right off the bat. That's how deep the league is, deeper, and there are more teams that can threaten to win than I've ever seen in all my life following basketball.
Well, that's what made the NFL playoffs the greatest NFL playoffs of all time this year, that there was no dominating team that anybody could win. And that made it was spectacular. How would you sell the Lakers' job to a coach? How would you sell somebody on taking that job?
I would say don't pay attention to the previous 2 years. Even that guy that we just fired won a championship. You're going to be in L.A. You're going to make a lot of money. You have a chance to immortalize yourself by winning. I mean, it's easy. It's an easy sell. It's not an easy team to rebuild. It's not going to be easy to win, but it's an easy job to sell. In these days of marketing, I mean, they'll be able to. They're not going to have any problem getting somebody to take the job of the Los Angeles Lakers. They're going to have a problem having somebody come in and win there.
Yeah.
But even that guy just won. He just won 2 years ago. So people can say, well, Rob Pelinka doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, he just won. They just won in Washington the last 2 years?
Haven't won in 45. Yeah, haven't won in 45 years.
The Lakers won. And by the way, have the Celtics won in the last 2 years?
No.
The Heat won in the last 2 years? No. The Lakers won in the last 2 years. So they'll wind up getting the coach. Look, Tony, you pointed this out yesterday totally accurately, that guys like Tyronn Lue and, they didn't want Jason Kidd.
And Monty Williams. They turned it down.
And Monty Williams. Monty Williams looked at what he had, though, and said, okay, I think I can win here with this. Not every guy's going to do that. As a matter of fact, 7 out of 10 won't do that.
All right. We'll get you out of here on this because you didn't have the chance on Monday. Wrap up thoughts on Tiger and the Masters and watching it.
Well, it's a simple thought. What Tiger did was otherworldly. And I didn't think he was going to do it, as you know. I didn't think he was going to play. Right. I thought there was no chance. It was otherworldly. I watched every swing of the club that I could with him. The event did not captivate me independently of Tiger as much as it often does.
Agree.
It's okay. It's not anything against Scottie Scheffler and the inability to watch him or watch Colin Morikawa or watch that guy Cam Smith from Australia. It was all terrific. I just wasn't as engaged as I normally am, and I don't know what it will be like going forward. with an occasional Tiger pop up. I don't know, but it was just to see him out there was so staggering. And because of my circumstance of having had foot and leg surgery during the week over the weekend, that's all I could do was watch television. I couldn't leave. I was chained to a hospital bed, and all I could do was watch Tiger. People call and say, "Hey, what are you doing? What am I doing?" Well, let's see. I can't walk, and the Masters is on. What do you think I'm doing?
Yeah.
So it was a real easy selection, and I watched every basketball game that could be watched going into the play-in. So I feel as caught up as I can be. But Tiger, man, the words fail most of us because there's no repeat. There's no blueprint for what we saw, and I don't know what we're going to see at St. Andrews. Suppose he goes out and practices a bunch and his body can't take that. Then what do we see? So I'm amazed. I'm glad I saw it. It doesn't relate in any way to what we know about professional golf or even Tiger's career. The will he has, it may be the greatest will. I know it's golf. You're going to point to other sports, and I would just say that to me, the greatest will I'd ever seen in sports is Muhammad Ali. And Michael Jordan was right there. And Tiger Woods is in that category.
I've got to tell you, you're leaving somebody out, and I know he's not on this level. But Alex Smith, to play in an NFL game, that's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
It's a miracle, Tony. So is Tony Conigliaro.
Yeah.
But that's not the same. That's not the same category. I'm talking about a will
that
makes you maybe the greatest sportsman. Remember, in 1998, you and I sat on a panel, which, of course, led to the existence of PTI, and we voted on who we thought were the greatest athletes of the 20th century.
20th century, yeah.
And at near the top of our list, both of us, were Ali and Jordan.
Sure.
Now, Alex Smith is not on that list.
No, it's the top three on anybody's list who was paying attention are Ali, Jordan, and Ruth. That's it.
Yes.
That's everybody's top three.
That's right. And so Alex Smith, the miracle in which he was and is involved, yes, that goes on any a different
unbelievable
just sports.
To play in the NFL, to get hit like that.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
I will see you later, okay? Feel good. I'll see you later.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We will take a break. Barry Svrluga will join us to talk about what's going on with the Nats. I mean, people selling teams. I'm at a loss to understand this, me personally. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Hot Pink Hangover. This is a song called I Got This, which is a female empowerment song aimed at destroying the narrative that women need men in their lives to be fulfilled. It was originally written as an acoustic country song to play only during the unplugged sets for Hot Pink Hangover. But after many requests for us to record it, an electric version, we decided to include it on our final album. Listeners can find these songs and the rest of the Beautiful Freaks album on Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and the other popular streaming services. And Davey Hazard writes, "Go Timberwolves." Good for him. I feel the same way. We welcome in Barry Svrluga. And there's a lot of things that we can talk about. But I'll just start this by saying, when I found out that the Learners were allowing for the possibility of selling the team, which means they intend to sell the team, I was so stunned, Barry. You had the story. It's yours. I was so stunned, I felt, my first reaction was, I just assumed their ownership would be generational. I really did, would go on forever. I felt a little bit cheated. I felt dismayed. I know casually everyone in the family, not any more than casually. And I felt wounded by it. And I wonder if you can tell me and tell all the people that listen, if they care about this, why this would happen.
Well, I think it's complex, Tony. And I would say that I get where you're coming from. In 2018, Mark Lerner told me, "We will never sell the Nationals. This was a family investment." And it's exactly what you were thinking. And, you know, if you think about it, they've owned it for 16 years. It's suddenly, when you announce the possibility that you're going to sell, which, as you said, means they're going to sell.
Yeah, of course.
It feels like a business transaction and not a civic investment. It just feels like we bought it for $450 million. Forbes will tell you it's worth $2 billion right now. Maybe we're going to quadruple our investment, and we're just going to cash out. And I get why a fan would feel wounded, because this is not a mall or an office building. It's something you invest your time and your finances and your emotions in. And when somebody turns around and shows you that, no, this is just something we were sitting on to make more cash for 16 years, it seems a little crass. I will say that, while they would not directly link the two, it's possible that no sector of the economy has suffered more over the course of the pandemic than commercial real estate. Ted Lerner made his billions in commercial real estate. And I think it's reasonable to assume that they had two businesses, the Nationals and their real estate business, that were struggling over the course of the past couple of years, and maybe struggling to a point where they thought it's no longer profitable, but it's also not enjoyable to oversee these two entities. I'm supposing mm-hmm. here some, but you're right, Tony. It's stunning to me. I thought the next generation was going to step up. I had asked to talk to Mark Lerner because I wanted to talk to him about, okay, who among your younger generation is preparing to take this thing over, and how are they doing that? Those kids are in their 30s now, so they're not kids. They have kids of their own. Just a big development in Washington, D.C. sports.
So I've tried to understand this, and I had this conversation with my son the other day. And I said, I'm an old man, and I am set in my ways, and I understand how I got to where I am. I understand my worldview. My worldview, and it's probably similar to yours, is as a sports writer. Consequently, I see everything in wins and losses, ultimately for me, who won and who lost. There's a lot of years of looking at life that way. I have a certain amount of nuance. I have a certain amount of subtlety. But ultimately, Barry, I see the world in wins and losses. I don't know what business people see the world as. Maybe they just see it in terms of profit and loss. Maybe they see it different. Maybe you can own, if you are a business person and you've made your life in the world of business, maybe you can own a baseball team or a basketball team or a football team. And when the moment is right to sell it, you sell it. Because the only way you make money owning a team is by selling the team. That's the only way, ultimately. So maybe they look at the world differently. Do you know what I'm saying? I just don't look at the world that way.
I don't either, but that's why we don't have B's at the end of our names, right? Like our net worth is not mentioned, you know, measured a B at the end of it. So I think there does have to be, I mean, over the years, different learners have said different things to me, just as you said, casual conversation that have, you know, kind of lend some insight into how they operate. Years and years ago, I think maybe in the first year of their ownership, Mark Lerner said to me, we were at some event, and he said, you know, my dad, we were talking about his dad, who is the guy, he's the guy who did this, by the way. I mean, he is
Ted Lerner. Yeah.
He's Ted Lerner, borrowed money from his wife in 1952 to buy his first property and built it from the ground up. Everybody else in this case was born on third base. Ted Lerner built the entire thing. So Mark and I were talking about his dad, Mark said, you know, my dad still knows the value of a dollar. He knows that a dollar not spent is a dollar made. And there's a worldview in there that the dollar is important. every dollar is important. And I think if you go back to your kind of initial emotions about this, feeling wounded, is that if that's not your worldview, if your worldview is, you know, more nuanced and that some investments would mean different things emotionally to you than other investments, that a baseball team has emotions woven into that investment, then you would have a hard time living in a world in which, you know the value of a dollar and every dollar is valued the same, whether it's spent or it's saved. I just think that that's made Ted Lerner a huge pile of money that most of us could never conceive of. And I have to believe that kind of thinking is that opportunistic thinking goes into, look, we've got this asset, our businesses are struggling. We might be able to quadruple our profit on this asset, take the emotions out of it, because we always take the emotions out of it. We're going to sell it.
Should we have seen this coming?
You know, it's a great question. I know people around the team that know the team and know the family. Some have predicted, I always thought they were going to sell. I didn't see it coming now. Others are just blown out of the water. Like, whoa, I didn't, go back to the Mark Lerner quote from 2018. We're never going to sell. The next generation is in their 30s. It seems a natural handoff. I'm not going to sit here and tell you. I mean, I saw it coming when I started hearing things over the last several weeks that led to this story. But before that, I wasn't onto it at all. I mean, and if somebody within the organization said, oh, I for the last couple of years, I think it's been building, I'd believe them, but that's not the overwhelming sense.
This is a small question, but I went to it very quickly. How much of this is not wanting to pay Juan Soto what Juan Soto is going to be paid by someone else, and if you don't pay him, having then lost Harper and Rendon and Scherzer and Turner and Soto, and legitimately allowing fans to think, what are you people doing?
Yeah, so I think the Soto question is huge, and it's one I've asked around about. And I think if there is any sort of queasiness about the idea of spending $500 million on a single player, because that's if it's not 500, it's going to be 450 at least, and that's not. I mean, I don't say that casually. That's what it's going to cost. And guess what? It's going to be worth it. Like that is what he costs. That is his market. He will not be overpaid. He's that good. I think there could be an element of, geez, we've just paid Steven Strasburg $245 million and he can't pitch. And this whole environment, Juan Soto or Bryce Harper or whoever the next person is too rich for our blood. It's too much money to put into single employees. And while, I would defend the Lerners up and down for their payroll commitments over the years, they've always had, when the team was
top
good
half
enough,
all the time,
and also top four a couple of years. So
they were good owners,
but they also then wanted to save elsewhere. So if you work there, you know the I don't want to say cut corners, but you know where they didn't spend. I can see, Tony, where you know that those costs are going to be huge for labor, and you don't know really what your revenue is going to be, because you still have the Masson problem and your attendance. They did not sell out on opening day. They have not been able to ever cash in on their, the good feelings provided by the World Series title, because the next year was a pandemic. So they didn't have a packed ballpark with a ring ceremony and everything, all the good feelings that go into that. So I'm not going to draw a direct line between Soto's going to cost a lot and they're selling the team, but I think the overall, oh my goodness, to be competitive, you need to spend $190, $200 million on payroll every year. That could be a possible motivator.
So the notes that I wrote down, and they are, they reflect being wounded. You just never expect this. You never expect it, it's a successful franchise. They are stewards of something that is civic and not just business, at least in my mind. They were very good owners. They won a World Series. I absolutely did not ever expect this. I was stunned.
Well, I think I come back to that, and we've discussed it a little. that civic element. And the word you used, stewardship, that kind of indicates that there's a greater good here. It's not like what store am I going to put in the corner of my mall. It's like, who am I getting as the third baseman? And does my fan base, because I have a fan base, it's not just a fan base is a different consumer base than just a customer who walks into a store and buys a sweater. It is,
yes,
you know, it is,
yes,
somebody who is willing to not only come to my place of business and pay to get in it and pay for the food that I provide there, but it's nobody sits on a couch 162 times a year and roots for a mall. They root for a team. They buy gear for a team. And so I always say that owners owe it to their fans to provide a reason to feel good about investing your time and your money and your emotions. And all of those things, those three kind of categories are probably weighed equally. People will complain about the money because that's something that goes out of their pocket. But I would argue your time and your emotions are as valuable in that investment. So then when you hear the announcement, we're exploring selling the team, even if there was a lot of thought and care, and I'm sure there was a lot of thought and care in making this decision, and I don't believe that it was a unanimous decision within the family. I think there was a lot of rancor about this. But when you hear it, it can't help but sound casual. And nothing about being a sports fan for the truly invested is casual, because you're upset that Victor Robles doesn't have a hit this year or Patrick Corbin.
Yes. I want to reach through the set and strangle Patrick Corbin when you go into the third and you've thrown 60 pitches already. Yes.
And so that's why this transaction, when it comes down to what it strips away, is the idea that we, the Lerner family of Washington, D.C., made an investment not just for our family, but for the city. Because
yes,
we were going to be stewards, and we're going to help you, and we're going to grow together, and you're going to like us as owners because we've made good decisions and we've
100%.
Provided good players. And then when you say just 16 years later, I talked to somebody in baseball yesterday. It's like, you know, that's a snap of the fingers. That's in
yes,
ownership terms. They want leagues want stability. They want to know that they have pillars of people who have known the business for years and years and years, so that when a new person comes in, there aren't eight new people. There are 29 people who have been there for years, and they can say, this is how it's done. You follow our lead. You learn the business. So anytime that there's transition, they don't want that, unless it's the NFL and Dan Snyder. They would love that. But so it just – you're right. It just is jarring. It's jarring because – these things are supposed to be handed down from generation to generation, and there was an opportunity to do that here, and it's not going to happen.
Do you have any idea who might be interested in buying this team?
So I keep hearing Ted Leonsis,
right,
the owner of the Capitals and the Wizards. That makes a lot of sense. My suspicion, you know, I don't know what these net worth numbers that you can find are. I don't know how they're calculated or how accurate they are. Ted Lerner is supposedly worth $4.5 billion, according to Forbes. Ted Leonsis is worth $1.6 billion. I think he has significant investors in Monumental Sports, which oversees the Capitals and the Mystics and the Wizards. Lauren Powell Jobs is one of those. She's obviously extremely wealthy. Perhaps he could convince her to go in on the Nats with her. David Rubenstein of the Carlyle Group in town, huge philanthropist, anything DC-wise. It seems like he wants to put his hand up. And then I have not heard this directly from anybody who knows anything, but the natural name to think of is Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post and Amazon founder. He's now got ties to DC in that, you know, he owns the Post and the other Amazon headquarters is coming to Alexandria. And he's also been kind of sniffing around for an NFL team. But I'm not sure baseball is the same as the NFL. In fact, I'm sure baseball is not the same as the NFL, so I don't know for sure, but that's a natural place to look.
I wish Don Graham had enough money to do this.
Wow.
I really wish that, because he would be, Don and his family would understand what you have to do. Honestly, I can't agree more with everything you said, but for me, you're right. It's a snap of a finger, 16 years. It's nothing in ownership. It's absolutely nothing. And they were fine owners, and they produced good teams. And it's now Soto is going to be someone else's decision to make. And this season is going down the drain. I don't know. It made me, as I said, it was wounding for me, because I know them, you know, hello, goodbye and stuff like that. And they've always been very nice. And I think they did a very good job. And the notion that they were going to sell. And again, the only way you make money, you know, for generations to come is to sell the team. But usually you wait a little bit longer, you know, right, Barry? You wait a little bit longer. It's like that.
I think so. I absolutely thought that this was going to be the next generation's decision to make about whether to hand it to theirs. And Tony, it's a, you know, is this story a big national story? It's not. It's not a big national story, but
it's local.
But it gets to core elements of why you root for sports teams. I mean, it's a business story, and we're talking about billions and profits and where the revenue comes from, and people who like business get into that stuff. But if you can't see it in an emotional way, if you can't see that it affects the fan base in terms of, you know, did you betray me because you led me on to think that you cared about this as much as I did, not in a financial way, but in an emotional way, then I feel betrayed. Now that apply that to whatever team in whatever town, that's what this is about.
That's 100%. I just have one small little question. There was, at some point, there was rules against cross-ownership in various leagues. Would Ted Leonsis be allowed to own all of these teams? Would any league say, no, you can't devote your attention that you need to devote? Would he have to divest one of those teams or two of those teams if he wanted the Nats?
No, I asked yesterday, and that seems to not be an issue. John Henry of the Red Sox owns Liverpool in the English Premier League. There's a few baseball owners who are invested in their soccer teams locally. I think John Henry just bought the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. So they're not only like cross leagues, but cross markets in some cases. So I don't, you know, Ted needs to get the money and he has to have the desire. I'm not 100% sure on either of those, but there's not a rule preventing it.
If he wants to get the money, just go to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. They're making big money right now. Don't I know that? Thank you, Barry. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Tony. Thanks.
Barry Zwierluga is great. He's great. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag, got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag, gonna read some for all you folks. Hey, Tony! Come on! Hey, Tony! Read that mail now, baby.
Love hot pink candle.
It's fantastic.
You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
That'll just about do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me say Levon wears his war wound like a crown. He calls his child Jesus because he likes the name and sends him to the finest school in town. If you go through the catalog of Elton John and Billy Joel, they are the same person. You just, you know, one is the madman across the water. It's, you know, their stuff's great.
Yeah.
Billy Joel, Elton John. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon, Barry Zwierluga. Thanks to today's sponsors, Shopify and ZipRecruiter. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. We are way behind on our sea salt emails and our cottage cheese emails. And let's go. From Kevin Koski in Annapolis. Sure, they lost by 20 or so. Sure, the Orchid might not pitch until July. Sure, the Nats might lose 100 games this year. But you can't tell me you're not over the moon that you don't have to watch Wander Suero ever pitch again for the Nats because he's in Anaheim. From Noah Kliegerman. You weren't super clear about it on last Thursday's podcast, so I just wanted to confirm. Those runs given up by the Nats pitchers, 10 runs each, were they earned? Yes. Stay grumpy, my friend Noah in Austin. From Graham Van Hook. In downtown Bethesda, there's a Dunkin' Donuts that shares their store with a Baskin-Robbins. I made a point to visit this weekend in search of the coffee ice cream. I asked the woman behind the counter, "Do you have coffee-flavored ice cream?" "No, we don't have that flavor," she replied. You see the irony in this, don't you? As I panned the store, locking my eyes on the Dunkin' Donuts logo. Looking back at her, she snapped, "No, I don't. Are you going to order?" It's just such a wonderful email. Graham Van Hook, thank you so much. From Kenny Cohn. I'm a coffee ice cream lover, too. I found the best coffee ice cream in the area so far. Sarah's Homemade Ice Cream in the Wildwood Shopping Center. Dark roasted espresso bean. I've never had that.
I've not either.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Sarah's Homemade.
I will look for that.
Yes, Sarah's Homemade. From Robert Manley, who, of course, works for Safeway. In regards to Michael's question on the podcast, the Raspberry Phage, F-A-G-E, has been taken out of most store sets for now, but the signature brand Musil is still available in some stores. The reason why it's coming out of stock for you online is because the store is in close proximity to your address. It's currently not in stock. And also due to the pandemic, the Musli is in short supply currently. But I did come across it just the other day in the only Safeway, as you see pictured attached. Any and all Safeway questions, feel free to ask. Love this.
It's good to have a guy, isn't it?
From Ruck. I work in the dairy department of my Safeway store. I've been doing it for over 3 decades. Your cottage cheese rant was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. My tiny store is one of the smallest in the division. The locals call it the Soviet Safeway, since we don't carry all the items the big stores do. I like to think of it as an oversized 7-Eleven, but it's one of the friendlier stores. We're located at Four Corners in Silver Spring, Maryland. As of this morning, we had more of your cottage cheese than we needed. We have enough for you to buy an entire shelf of it. Like the lady said in her email the other day, my dad's cottage cheese was so out of date, yet he said it was okay and ate it anyway. So you can take your time and enjoy every bite and don't have to worry about the expiration date. Unless it's green, you're good to go. I've even added a picture so you will know exactly what you came in to buy in case you forgot. That tends to happen when you get older. I love it when customers are wandering around asking, "What did my wife tell me to get?" It happens to me and I work here. Just a great email. From Dara Flannery in Melbourne, Australia.
Ooh.
I hate cottage cheese.
Okay, thank you, Dara.
From Paul Penniman. I hate, not a little Richard Penniman, but Paul Penniman. I hate cottage cheese, but if the Nats keep playing like this, I may have to start eating it. From Matt Sterling in Media, Pennsylvania. Come for the sports talk, stay for the curds. From Bob Davidson. First a disclaimer. I'm the cousin of DG, brother of Steve Davidson, who played ball with Richie Lobel at Valley Stream South High School. Being 6 years younger, while my brother was shooting hoops, I was sitting on the cheerleaders bench with the Noodleman triplets. Now who's the smart one? Was thrilled to hear you're from Lynbrook. Did you get your bar mitzvah suit at Murley's? Of course I did. Great husky section. I wasn't husky. Maybe you were, Bobby. I wasn't husky. Just for the record, I identify as a 4% large curder. Sounds like a biker gang. Thought you'd enjoy the attached. And it's large curd with my name superimposed in it. And it's just, there's a great email by Bob Davis. From Claire Natola. On behalf of native Bostonians the world over, I'd like to thank Dan Byrne for his great Krzyzewski tune. We can easily adapt it for our beloved number 8, YASTRZEMSKI.
Long Island Zone, right?
Yeah. Oh, Bridgehampton. Okay, this is great. On Wednesday's pod, I had the great pleasure of hearing my email read on your show. I've made it past the wall of Nigel a few times now. And each time you pause before pronouncing my very difficult last name, it's understandable. Anschutz is a tough one. So to make your life easier and hopefully to have my brilliant emails read more often on your show, I've decided to change my name to something more marketable. Thanks in advance for reading this email on the air. Signed, Jason S. Bowker. Brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Thank you, Jason.
From the great Brendan Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey. Sure, easy pass may be one of the greatest inventions, but just think of the bloodshed the device could have avoided if it had been invented a couple of decades earlier. If easy pass was around in the late 40s, surely Sonny Corleone would have driven right past the hitmen in the toll booth on the causeway. With Sonny alive, the families likely never go to war. Sonny becomes the Don to replace his old man. Fredo is likely never put to death by his own brother because the family probably stays in New York. With Michael not at the seat at the head of the family, Frankie Pantangeli never kills himself after the Senate hearing because there's no hearing. Liv Tartaglia lightly dies, though. Why? Because he's a pimp.
That's very
from
true.
Teresa LaHaye. Dear Mr. Tony, I want to talk about Bruno. I don't know what that means. It says Michael will know.
I
don't know what that
means.
We'll
have to save that for Michael.
That for Michael.
Yes.
From Josh from Connecticut. I had pork chops last night. From Jim Britt. Listening to the pod last week, you were reading an email from that hockey announcer, and he mentioned Babson College. I know that school. My dad graduated from Babson. It's a private business school in Wellesley, Massachusetts, that has turned out CEOs and the founders of companies like Toyota, Gerber Products, DreamWorks, Tommy Hilfiger, and Tony's favorite NFL owner, Arthur Blank of Home Depot fame, and the owner of the Falcons. My dad is also on that list. Stephen J. Britt, class of 58. He was the father of Black & Decker's Dustbuster, according to Time, New York Magazine, and a lot of other national publications. If you guys need any Dustbusters, let me know. I've bought Dustbusters in my life. I got one in every place I own.
As have I, yes.
Michael, cherish every day you get with your father. I lost my dad on December 31st. What I wouldn't give for one of those daily phone calls on how to get the game on TV or a request to take him somewhere for some good food. One final note. More email, not less. Give that to Michael, too. Bob Walsh, Wethersfield, Connecticut. What am I proudest of? I am proudest of my marriage of 38 years and my five children have turned out to be good people. And while not on the proudest list, I'm also proud that on August 7th, 2021, Summer of Littles 3.1 saw more than 200 littles turn out at 40 venues in the UK, the US, and Canada to celebrate our community. This year, Summer of Littles 4 is on August 6th. It promises to be even bigger, and we're looking for littles who want to host a venue in their locale. Folks who are interested in hosting should visit our website, summeroflittles.com, which I recommend.
Yes, absolutely.
And Chris from Durham, which I assume is Durham, North Carolina. This might be a little bit late, but since we're talking about things we're proud of, my team won at Bar Trivia a few weeks back, and with help from your show, when one of the questions was, what is the name of the bear that has recently ransacked homes in the California community? My team looked at me befuddled as I quickly came up with the answer. And all thanks to your show that I had listened to earlier that day. Also, I am a nuclear pharmacist. If there isn't one already, do you mind making me the official nuclear pharmacist, Tony Kornheiser show? If so, then eat it, Howie. You can do that. What does that mean? That's nuclear medicine, right? Is it special?
I guess.
Can you get me another booster,
right.
Chris from Durham? Can you hook me up with a booster in 4 months?
I'm pretty sure Chris would not have turned his back at you.
I hope not. If you're out on your bike tonight, as always, do wear white.
But I still need a bit of milk, full fat, which I've warmed in the microwave.
Pictures on a screen. You were hanging on the wall. It opens.